Let's get over now to the tensions in Ukraine.
The U.S. issuing its strongest warning yet to Vladimir Putin.
The president is looking at plans by air, by sea, and on the ground.
Escalating tensions over a potential Russian invasion of Ukraine.
To fortify NATO allies in Eastern Europe.
This is the greatest standoff we've seen in a long time, basically between those who believe in the global rules that we've all lived under for decades and the return, let's say, of great power politics. It looks like we are on the verge of a Russian invasion of Ukraine, and so the U.S., Europe, and the rest of the world is trying to find a way to stave off the latest land war in Europe that we haven't seen for decades. Despite some other ones, of course, in Yugoslavia and Georgia and elsewhere.
I'm Annie Reese. This is Politico Dispatch. And today...
I'm Alex Ward. I'm a national security reporter here at Politico, and I also anchor our National Security Daily newsletter.
Alex Ward, on where we are at in week three of extremely high tensions between the U.S. and Russia, as 2 weeks of diplomatic talks have so far failed. So, Alex, what happened, or more accurately, what didn't happen in the past few weeks of diplomatic talks?
Yeah, usually diplomacy leads to better outcomes, but unanimously everyone felt that the failure to reach some sort of diplomatic agreement made war more likely. I want to say very clearly, this is really not the Biden administration's fault. I mean, Russia went in with pretty maximalist requests. They were basically saying NATO can no longer welcome in other members. It can't have its open door policy available to the likes of Ukraine and Georgia, that the U.S. must remove certain troops from the eastern flank, et cetera, et cetera. Now, these are requests that the U.S. was never likely to give in on, and leading many people to think that this was Russia making requests to then later say, oh, we tried the diplomatic route, but now we have no other choice but to go into Ukraine. And that's sort of where we're at. Despite multiple diplomatic attempts, there really is no pathway forward. The U.S. says it's going to hand in, you know, its own written responses to Russia's requests and demands. And they're unlikely to change the Kremlin's mind, in which case we're, you know, back to square one and with a likelier chance of some sort of conflict spurring up soon.
What does it look like if Russia invades Ukraine? Do we know?
It's a great question. We're still not sure. So one theory is that there'll be sort of cyber attacks at the beginning, you know, maybe hold government web pages hostage. We've already seen a recent cyber attack of Ukrainian government websites. Maybe there's some missile barrages into strategic Ukrainian positions, including the capital. Lest we forget, we have Russian troops in Belarus, and the border of Belarus is only about 100 miles away from Kyiv, the capital of Ukraine. So they could launch some missiles into Kyiv, and you could just have old-fashioned, you know, tanks rolling over the border and starting to work their way towards the capital and other locations. And lest we forget, we do already have some Russian paramilitary forces in the Donbass and Ukraine's east who could move further westward and perhaps with some more help from Russian troops. So we don't know what this looks like, but we do know that despite, you know, the Ukrainian military's might, they do have a lot of strength. They're just no match for the Russian forces at this point and would need a lot of help. So it looks pretty clear that if the Russians decide to invade, and right as of this moment, it is not clear that Putin has made that decision. But if they were to invade, it's unlikely that the Ukrainians can fend off ultimately. But that said, everyone expects an incredibly bloody and costly fight for both sides if the Russians do invade.
And so far, and obviously this is like kind of ever changing, but is there really any evidence that any of these punishments proposed by the U.S. and NATO are effective deterrents?
It remains to be seen. I mean, I think as of this moment, as of the moment that we're recording this, it looks like yes, because the Russians have not invaded Ukraine, right? If it changes, if the Russians do, then clearly it didn't work. I feel like in a sense we should judge the Biden administration on whether or not Russia invades more so than the package of sanctions or the threats that they've put in or say they would do. This is the big debate roiling Washington, especially right now, is, you know, sanction now or later. The Biden administration contends that sanctioning now diminishes that deterrent effect because basically Moscow would be damned if you do, damned if you don't. So we've already been sanctioned, might as well go invade Ukraine. That is their argument. And that is, you know, backed by many Democrats on the Hill And there's also the other side, which are mostly Russia hawks and Republicans, that are saying, no, you need to sanction now, basically bloody Putin's nose, so he'll, you know, slink away and or at least get a taste of what's to come. What is right, we don't know, frankly. But as of this moment, Russia's not invaded Ukraine, so the Biden argument, for the moment, looks correct.
What's the spectrum of feelings on Capitol Hill on this?
You know, Senator Bob Menendez, the chair of the Senate Foreign Relations Committee, he has proposed a quote-unquote mother of all sanctions bill that, you know, if passed and becomes law, would show that there is tons of congressional backing for a really intense sanctions regime of Russia. So that could matter quite a bit, because if it passes and becomes law, then it tells Putin, ooh, there is, you know, support for really sticking it to my economy here. It isn't just sort of Biden imposing stuff and maybe a future president reduces that. No, this is mandated legislation becoming law. It would show that, you know, both parties are behind the president and pushing back on Russia. So there's a lot of interest in the White House. The White House has come out and backed this bill. And there's a lot of interest at the moment between Menendez and Republicans to hammer something out. The sticking point being, you guessed it, Republicans would like more sanctions today, or Democrats want to keep their cards close to their chest. But this is another important factor that's happening outside of the executive branch, that this is where the legislature can get involved.
Can you pinpoint the inciting incident for rising Russian tension here? Or is this kind of a case of these geopolitical factors are so interconnected that, hey, it goes back to Ukraine's increasingly friendly relationship with NATO, or no, it goes back to NATO being founded, or no, it actually goes all the way back to World War II?
I mean, it depends who you ask, right? There are some who will say, well, this is just Putin trying to seek revenge for the collapse of the Soviet Union and trying to reconstitute it as best he can. That's sort of explanation one. Explanation two is, and this is more from the progressive wing, you know, NATO and the U.S. made a mistake in expanding the alliance further eastward, thereby eventually pissing off the Russians. You know, there were experts who were saying, look, you're welcome to expand. You're welcome to bring more nations in. But if you do that, do not expect friendly relations with NATO, and eventually it'll come back to bite you. So there are some experts who say, you know, that's sort of what we're seeing now, that NATO has overstepped. That's explanation two. Explanation three is Ukraine tried to get closer to the EU through a trade deal. Eventually, it was reneged because Putin put pressure on then Ukrainian President Yanukovych. And it led to these protests in the streets. You might remember at the Maidan, I believe 2014 is the year. And since then, there has really been a pretty pro-Western force in Ukraine, you know, pro-Western governments, pro-Western populace. And no matter what Putin does, he cannot put the genie back in the bottle. This is now a country that is moving away from the Russian sphere of influence, and one that is so important to Russia's present and its history. And so he'll do anything to make sure that, you know, never happens. And that anything could include tons of troops and missiles streaking into Ukraine anytime soon.
So what are some possible outcomes that we're looking at here?
It's a sliding scale, you know. I mean, one option is the U.S. and Russia make some sort of agreement, maybe on arms control, maybe on a pause on accession to NATO, and maybe Putin sends some troops home. Maybe there's to use Biden's terminology, a minor incursion. So Putin saves face, but doesn't necessarily go all the way into a costly, bloody war. And then you can sort of go up that scale all the way to World War II, but with far more advanced weaponry. The chances of that sort of all-out war, as of this moment, I'm told, are pretty unlikely. Mm-hmm. That doesn't mean it won't happen. And, you know, Fiona Hill, who worked for Trump in the Trump White House as the Russia advisor, said something pretty interesting to Puck News the other day, which was, you know, Putin is kind of isolated right now. It's COVID. You know, he doesn't have many top advisors going near him and sort of advising him on bigger things happening. There's also tons of domestic strife inside of Russia. But, you know, if this, you do have Nord Stream 2 nearly being complete, the pipeline, you do have Alexei Navalny, his biggest domestic rival, in jail. Maybe this is the moment you make a move. And maybe he's just being poorly advised or not really advised at all. And he's just sort of, you know, stewing by himself.
Is there anything you think people don't get about this?
I think we sometimes underestimate how much, well, I guess sort of we underestimate something and we overestimate something. I think we underestimate how much other nations, especially nations that have a lot of power, nuclear powers like Russia, say, do not care about the sort of post-1945 norms that the U.S. has tried to inculcate and expand around the world. So we underestimate sometimes how other nations see the world and feel like, okay, well, they're not constrained by those, you know, regimes or those rules. I think we overestimate also the extent of American power here. You know, there is this feeling that America can do anything, and if only we pushed hard enough, we can force Russia to back off. But we have to ask ourselves, you know, what is the level of commitment Putin is willing to put into Ukraine versus how many resources and level of commitment should the U.S. put in defending Ukraine? And I would bet Putin's level of commitment is far higher. And arguably, you know, the U.S. should not match that level of commitment. We've got our own problems at home. After leaving Afghanistan, do we really want to send more troops there? And some people will argue this is a European problem. Why should the U.S. care more about European security than Europeans do? Especially when Germany, the first or second most powerful nation in Europe, is not really doing as much as it could be right now. So does this mean that, you know, Biden couldn't do more? No. Does that mean that, you know, Biden can't stop Putin from going into Ukraine? No. But it does mean that there is a limit to American interest and influence here. Unless it really wanted to go all in, and I doubt you'll find many Americans who really want to go all in to protect Ukraine.
Alex Ward, thank you so much for talking with me.
Thanks for having me.
Also today, the Supreme Court said on Monday that it will revisit the question of affirmative action in higher education, deciding to hear cases challenging the use of race as one factor in admissions at Harvard University and the University of North Carolina. Arguments in the two cases will likely be heard in the court's new term beginning in October. And billionaire investor and Dallas Mavericks owner Mark Cuban has launched an online pharmacy for generic drugs that promises steep discounts over traditional distributors. The pharmacy does not accept health insurance, but says that prices will still be lower than what people would typically pay at a pharmacy. Today's episode of Politico Dispatch included music composed by the mysterious Breakmaster Cylinder. Be sure to follow Politico Dispatch if you haven't yet, and if you can, leave us a rating and review. It helps more people find the show. I'm Annie Reese. Thanks so much for listening.